Well, we're very excited that all of you folks are here to hear this presentation today. We at Missions Resource Network are really excited to see the way that a lot of international missions is developing in the areas of partnerships. And so we're excited to see several class slots this year that are including people who are working together, collaborating, thinking together, and stewarding the Lord's resources in a better way, we believe at least. So we invited people to come who represent partnerships in different parts, well, in this case in Africa. So we're glad this morning to see that Brother Burton Hours is here with Healing Hands International, and Brother Ebenezer Udofia. So I'll just mention a little bit about them, and then we'll let them have a time. Bert is a shepherd in the Brentwood Hills Church in Nashville, that big city in the eastern side of the Bible Belt. We're glad to have him here to speak. He works with, he's been in business for many, many years, and he's been on the board of Healing Hands International for several years, and as of 2012, he's now the president of Healing Hands and does oversees the work all over Africa. Other continents as well? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. You'll tell us more about that. Ebenezer Udofia is from Nigeria, southwestern Nigeria. I've been in his stomping ground where he grew up. But he's now, as someone said, a transplant into East Africa, based in Nairobi, Kenya, and works in several places in East Africa, several countries. He has his master's degree in agriculture and rural development and working on a PhD. So he's very well qualified in what he does, and we're glad to have him here for the first time at Pepperdine as well. So let's begin with prayer, and then I'll turn the time over to you guys. Lord in heaven, we are thankful today that we can be together to represent so many people all over the world who are coming to you and whose lives are being transformed into your likeness, and whose communities also, O Lord, are being transformed by your love and the commitment of those who work on their behalf, work alongside people, nationals in many, many countries, to improve their lives and to be a blessing to the communities in which they live, O Lord. We pray that this work will continue and develop. We ask you to guide it, O Father. Help us who are here today to listen to what's going on. We pray that you will bless our time together. We want to be advocates, O Lord, of what you are doing in this world to redeem it, to make things right for the coming of the Lord. The second time. Bless this time together, Father, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
And on up.
Thank you, Sam.
Well, I think we actually have... good morning. Good morning. I was going to say, Ebenezer, come up here with me. You can stand up here with me. You're presenting here with me. So, and also we have Carl Birkebeil here. Carl is our Director of Agriculture. Ebenezer is our Director of Agriculture in Africa, and so I look around here, and I think I've counted at least four or maybe five of our partners that are actually in this room. I got Jonathan Seaman over here with Brentwood Hills Church of Christ, who is partners with us at the Nairobi Great Commission School, and Milton Jones over here with CRF, and a slew of people from MRN that where we partner, and Ron, where we partner with World Bible School, and Carl actually is not only an employee of Healing Hands, but also a partner with Healing Hands, because he has a nonprofit called Caring for Kenya, which existed long before we started working with Carl in agriculture. So that's what, about five different partners in this small room. So, you know, we're talking about partnerships, and so those of you who aren't partners, this is a good opportunity just to even talk to some of our partners. And so You know, we put together a presentation, and we'll go through that. We might go through that quickly. I know we've got lots of folks in here that we all know each other and some that we don't. But, you know, maybe we can have a conversation about partnerships. Maybe some of the pictures and things that we have up here will kind of stir that conversation. Ebenezer is here for the first time in the U.S., and I know he has to come to a terrible place like Pepperdine, but somebody has to do it, right, Ebenezer? So we are so excited to have Ebenezer here. He does such a great work in Kenya and actually all over East Africa for us. And the things that we're doing with CRF now, we have a person up there in Turkana that's hopefully going to be doing a lot of work, a lot of workshops in sustainable agriculture and working with Greg Williams. And so there's a lot of good things that are happening. If I look back over the last 5 years, there's been so much that's happened over the last 5 years that really wasn't happening around the world in partnering together in sustainable agriculture and water projects and different things. So I'll go through this real quick, and Ebenezer, you might want to scoot over. And one of the things that I want to start off with is we don't usually think about, this is probably not a slide you think of when we're talking about sustainable agriculture in Africa and water projects and partnering. But if you think about, when you look around here, we don't look like Africa. But 150 years ago, we did. And, you know, there was a lot of poverty. If you looked at 1867, it was right after the Civil War. There was a lot of poverty in the South. You know, if you look around the South, and I know it's probably not that way here in California, but there were small local churches all over the place because people walked everywhere. And so you know, you see the houses, the, you know, the shacks that people were living in. There was just, it was not a good time to probably be living in the 1860s, 1870s during Reconstruction. David Lipscomb, 1867, in the Gospel Advocate, wrote this, and some of you have heard me say this before, but he wrote, "As highly as we appreciate the Bible and its necessity to the temporal and spiritual well-being of man, a loaf of bread today, in the name of Christ, would do more good in opening the hearts of our southern people to the reception of the gospel than any number of Bibles, tracts, or preachers." And to me, I say that, I've told a number of you people, folks in here, that we don't associate social justice with the church. We just don't. I don't know where that happened. I think it must have happened sometime during my parents' lifetime. But 1867, in the Gospel Advocate, no doubt, was written by David Lipscomb. And I don't know if everybody in here knows who David Lipscomb was, but Lipscomb University was started by David Lipscomb. You know, he looked at kind of what we do in helping people as a way of spreading the word. And, you know, somehow we lost that. And we just thought that, well, the only thing we can do is hand out Bibles, tracts, and put preachers everywhere and churches everywhere. And that's important, but I think it starts with that. Now, Ebenezer, what do you say? And we have a video out. And what do you say in that video about when people first... Okay. Tell me what the phrase that you said in that video was.
I said, if when you show the love of Jesus Christ through the physical needs, when they see that you care about their physical needs, they will entrust you with their spiritual needs. So when you tell them about Christ, they listen because they know you love them. So it goes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, that's kind of the way we approach it. I know that's the way CRF approaches it, and working with kids and reaching families and planting churches. And that's, to me, that's the way we should be doing it. This is a video, and this is a TED Talk, a guy named Ernesto Ciroli, an Italian. It's about 2 minutes long. It's really good. It's not a spiritual video. He worked for an NGO. But it tells me a lot about what we do as nonprofits that do social justice and how we do things sometimes. And it's got a number of lessons in here.
Country. So I worked for an Italian NGO. And every single project that we set up in Africa failed. And I was distraught. I thought, age 21, that we Italians were good people and we were doing good work in Africa. Instead, everything we touched we killed. Our first project, the one that has inspired my first book, Ripples from the Zambezi, was a project where we Italians decided to teach Zambian people how to grow food. So we arrived there with Italian seeds in southern Zambia, in this absolutely magnificent valley going down to the Zambezi River, and we taught the local people how to grow Italian tomatoes and zucchini. And of course, the local people had absolutely no interest in doing that, so we paid them to come and work, and sometimes they would show up. And we were amazed that the local people in such fertile valley would not have any agriculture. But instead of asking them how come they were not growing anything, we simply said, thank God we're here. Just in the nick of time to save the Zambian people from starvation. And of course, everything in Africa grew beautifully, and we had these magnificent tomatoes. In Italy, a tomato would grow to this size, in Zambia, to this size. And we could not believe. And we were telling the Zambians, look how easy agriculture is. When the tomatoes were nice and ripe and red, overnight, some 200 hippos came out from the river and they ate everything. And we said to the Zambians, my God, the hippos. And the Zambians said, yes, that's why we have no agriculture here. Why didn't you tell us? You never asked. I thought it was only us Italians blundering around Africa. But then I saw what the Americans were doing, what the English were doing, what the French were doing. And after seeing what they were doing, I became quite proud of our project in Zambia. Because you see, at least we fed the hippos.
You know, first time I saw that, I thought, gosh, that sounds like some of the stuff that we do. And, you know, we all do that. And it's good to laugh about it when you can laugh about it, because sometimes, you know, we blunder around and it's hard to laugh about what we've done. You know, as Americans, I know I have a number of Africans in here, and you all probably don't see the humor in that nearly as much as us Americans do, because we know what we have done. And as Africans, you probably look at it and say, well, I knew that all along, because sometimes, you know, we just don't get it right. And we have this complex about what we think we know. And so I wrote down some things here of what we can learn from this. And one is, don't come in with a God complex. We tend to do that. You know, we're Americans, and we seem to think that we know exactly how to do things. And we don't. I mean, I'm always amazed at the work Ebenezer does in Kenya and Uganda, Tanzania. And he's a smart man and a good businessman, and he can do it much better than I can or Carl can coming in from the United States. Ask questions. You know, we say that, we talk about it, and yet then I know from our perspective we don't always follow through on that. Ask questions. And then the other key to that is listen to the answers that you get. You know, we just need to do a better job of listening. Go where we're asked. I know that that's a big part of Ebenezer's work. He refuses, isn't that right?
Right.
You won't go anywhere until somebody's asked you.
Sure.
And I don't know, it might even need to be in writing, I don't know. But
it has to be in writing.
Does it? And so that's important. We don't need to just go in because we think somebody needs us. That's like he said, you know, thank goodness we're here just in the nick of time to save the Zambian people from starvation. We don't know. Know that we might fail. There's actually another TED Talk. It's really good. And it's about failure. It's about NGOs and failure. And this guy was with Engineers Without Borders. And he talks about failure and how they were doing projects. And the kind of the same response that Ernesto Ciroli had there about their tomato project, they failed. And he realized that it was a cycle. All these NGOs continue to fail. And so they've actually got a website now on failure so that other people can learn. So my point here was that we have to learn from our failures, but also help others learn from our failures. because we do things wrong. But then if we don't tell people that we've done, you know, this was a failure, nobody else learns from that. So, you know, we just need to be bold enough and truthful enough and honest enough to, you know, when we fail at something, admit it and help other people to learn from it. Use local resources. I know we do that. I know you guys do that in drilling wells in Kenya. Use local people. You know, we anytime that we do something, it's better for us to buy things in country. I know in Nepal right now, it'd be expensive to send things into Nepal. And if the resources are there, I know we're working with some folks in India that can use the resources in their local economy and the Nepalese economy. So we need to support the local economies, build relationships, and be in it for the long haul. And I think everybody in here is in it for the long haul. I think as long as resources exist, I think that we'll do that. I wanted to start, and this is where I want Ebenezer to really help us out, because what we've done is we've put together some examples of partnerships and how they've worked. And then tomorrow in our lunch with CRF, I'm also going to talk about a couple of how churches can get involved. But I know one of our difficulties is always trying to involve Americans and American churches in the work, because our work is done far away, and not everybody can go to Africa, not everybody can go to Haiti or India or wherever. And so how do we enlist the support of people in the United States? If we go to Cambodia, you know, it's hard to get people excited. People just can't pick up and go there. And so we're always searching for ways to get people interested. Now, CRF has a way. They're working with children, and people want to support children, and they have that connection. They can connect with those kids and maybe have an individual supporter attached to an individual child. In our work, it's a little bit more difficult, so we're always searching. And this is Saturn Road in Garland, Texas, and Carl went down there and did a workshop, an ag workshop, doing this. Well, what did I just do there? Doing the same thing that we do in Africa, and so we did a workshop. But they are supporters of KCITI. They've been longtime supporters of Berkeley and Charlotte Hackett in Nairobi, and now KCITI, which is a school in Nairobi, also has a preacher training school, IPCM, Institute for Practical Christian Ministry, I believe. And they have 20 students. And so they wanted to connect with KCITI. So they did their own workshop, and Saturn Road is actually in an area of Dallas that I guess is in transition. I don't know Texas as well as some of you guys do, but I suppose it's in the area of transition. Different
Hispanic area.
Yeah. And so they did this as an outreach to their community. And so when they did that, they also then supported a workshop at KCITI. Ebenezer, you want to talk about KCITI and what you're doing there real quick? Because you actually attend church there.
Yeah. KCITI means Christian, Kenya Christian Industrial Training Institute. It's located in the slum. Actually, it looks like a slum, but the surrounding are Muslims. The Somalis, they came from Somalia because of the war and the crisis. They dwell there. And the church is right in the middle. This is called Isli. It's a place that's like if you're walking into Mogadishu, that is the capital of Somalia. All Muslims, all looking like terrorists and all that. And the road is bad, so you mingle in. And when you get to the campus of the KCITI, just as an oasis in the desert, beautiful place. But we are surprised that this place has not been bombed by terrorists, because the church has opened up this place for the people to come in and be a part of that place. So what we do there is that we train the preachers So we are. These are the preachers. They have a 1 year program. We give them a certificate. And so we train them Bibles and also train them in agricultural skills. The aim is for them to go out back to the field and be self supporting. We know the Americans has been sending dollars over the decades every month for them to support themselves, but we know that is just a handout, you know, and they become dependent all their lives. So our strategy is to empower these preachers. They see how it works. They do it that 1 year they stay in school and then go back home. So at KCITR, we Healing Hands facilitate agri training once every week. We give them all the skills they need and they learn. And some when they go back to their areas, they also teach their own people.
Now, in addition to that, Healing Hands has, in connection with Saturn Road and I can't remember who else, but we drilled a well, and I believe CRF drilled the well for us. And didn't CRF not drill this well?
Not this one.
Not this one? No. Okay. Well, it's in Nairobi, and they had a poor water source in Nairobi. Water lines come in, and everybody taps into those water lines. And by the time it was getting to the Great Commission or to KCITI, they weren't getting any water. And so we drilled a well there, and now what's really neat. I don't know if I've got a picture of it on here. No, not this one. But tell what are you doing with the water there?
Yes, what we do, because the guys in charge of the city water are Muslims. And so they sabotage the one that goes to the Christian facility. So now, what the Christians, the management of KCITI do is to give out this water freely to the neighbors. Everyone come in and get water. And so you don't need to preach a long sermon. This is the life of Jesus Christ, we assure him. And so we give out water freely.
So they're actually coming into the compound.
Mm-hmm. We pull up a pipe outside in front of the church compound.
Okay.
And they come in there to fetch.
So, which is just great, you know, because it is. It's a very difficult place. And I know you've been there. And it's the one place in Africa that I feel most uncomfortable. This is the other part of the garden. So what the preachers did, this is an area, this is Molo, is where?
Mm-hmm. Up in Nakuru.
Okay.
If you know, yes.
So to explain these are the preachers from IPCM.
Mm-hmm. So after the first training workshop that Carl conducted at Southern Road, we conducted one. Another, the second one at KCI Tech facility. The church in Southern Road decided to sponsor a training in rural Kenya. So we went up, we identified a place, and we went to a place called Molo. And we conducted this workshop. And the garden has been so great. The people are so grateful. They brought about 15 congregations in that one place. They participated.
And now you've done a second one through IPCM too,
yes.
Right?
After this one has been successful, the students we trained, 3 students from the IPCM, the graduates from IPCM, they went out to their rural communities. That we can call that the third generation, you know. We car trained in Saturn Road, we trained in IPCM. The students now went out to their communities just about a week or two before I came here. That was when the workshop took place. And they brought about 105 people, community leaders and church members, and they trained. They invited me. I went there and told them, well, I'm just here as an observer. And the students did the training. And so our training, the goal is, by the time we go through our training, agri-training, you must learn about Jesus Christ. You must hear about the gospel. Why is food production important? Why do you have to feed your families and your children? And so we preach the gospel. And to the students, all the participants, we challenge them, go out there and do the same thing. And we give out drip kits and the tools that they need for the training.
Caring for Kenya is a work that Carl started with his church in Champaign-Urbana 17, 18 years ago. And this is a really unique partnership because it exists in eastern Kenya, which is actually if you were to follow the road, it would be the road that go to Garissa and Somalia. That's not quite that far. It's we're not working in that area, but Tulia is about a four-hour drive from Nairobi. And Carl has worked with the leaders there and also Rotary clubs. And so this project here, you drilled, what, three wells and six kiosks. And this is, I believe, the largest kiosk. And you can see what they've done is they've drilled three wells. And did CRF come out and drill those wells for us?
No, not.
Okay, we were still over in Western Kenya with CRF. So we contracted with a drilling company to drill those wells. Carl raised, how much was this total project for water?
$116,000.
And Rotary International matches the funds. And so he's got Rotary clubs in the U.S. He's got Healing Hands partnering with them for money. You have to have an international Rotary Club, and so I believe this was the Rotary Club in Thika, Kenya. And then Rotary International partnered by contributing another 100% of what was raised. They match it to get $116,000. Now, we're also doing a second project, and that's $192,000. So it's a much more involved project than what we normally do. I mean, normally what we're doing is we're drilling water wells, and we tell people that it costs us, we try to raise sponsorships for wells at about $6,000 a well. This is to help a whole community and to take water wells, pump the water up to the hillsides to where those kiosks are, so then it flows down by gravity to some other kiosks. Then that the whole community can go to. But what's really unique about it is the partnership with Rotary. And oftentimes we don't think about outside sources to partner with. And, you know, everybody's money is the same. Once it goes in the pot, it's all the same. And if they can help us, you know, all they want is they want Rotary on the side of the building. And if you go around Kenya or Africa, you'll see, a lot of times you'll see these water kiosks, and it'll have on there who sponsored it. And so that's worked out really well. But Carl's been there working in that community, his church, and a lot of other people. Carl's had support from lots of other churches around the country for Caring for Kenya. They have their own website and teaching agriculture, water projects, and lots of other things. They've already. How many preachers have you sent to the Great Commission School?
13th one's there now.
So 13 preachers have gone through the Great Commission School. Because of the work that Caring for Kenya has been doing in eastern Kenya.
Does that mean funding provided?
I don't know. How much funding are you providing for them to go?
We're paying their expenses, and in some cases we've provided support.
You know, that's another whole topic right there, is support for the Great Commission School, because being an elder at Brentwood Hills, we're the sponsoring congregation for the Great Commission School, so I know how much it costs.
I didn't know if some of the proceeds from the things they were selling was helping to fund the students.
Oh, you're talking about the Great Commission School students. That's something that didn't get in our presentation here, because I don't know why it got left out, but one of our first partnerships was with Brentwood Hills and the Nairobi Great Commission School. That's really how Ebenezer got to Nairobi, was because we were looking for a place to send him out of northern Nigeria, where the violence was. And so we pulled he and his family out, sent him to Nairobi. He agreed to go there, a long ways from his home. And those, because of what he's doing there, he's working with those students 2 days a week. He works with the IPCM students 1 day a week. And then they're, like you know, they've got plots in their garden. They have a 2-acre plot, garden plot, 45 minutes by walking from the Great Commission School. And those students have a plot, and they sell some of those. Explain what they do in those plots.
We train them, give them the skills in the class, and give them a field. We split this plot to each student. Each of the students has their own plot, and we have a general place where all they work together as a community. We are encouraging them to work as a community. We also encourage them to support their individual families. So they have their own plot. They work. Whatever comes out from their plot belongs to the students. I think this is the motivation. So they learn to make money while they are in school, at least for their own pockets and some of their needs. And they also work to support the school that they that is training them. So, but the only problem now is we hope that when they have enough plot, they'll be able to raise their tuition fee from their plot. But right now, we only have 2 acres, which is not enough for all the students to have sufficient plot to raise money for their tuition. But part of their expenses, they get from their plot, and they're happy for it.
One of the other slides up here, what we'll get to, but we might as well go ahead and talk about it now, is the Bear Valley Church in Denver. We've tried to work with some of their schools in the past and have never had any real luck doing that, but they've recently had a complete change of view on how we're working. And so we've actually met with Bear Valley, and they want us to come into all of their extension schools and do this. And so we don't have the resources to go out, although we have received a large contribution to go out and do that. But with Ebenezer being in East Africa, we are working. We'll soon be going and doing some work at the Andrew Connolly School in Arusha, Tanzania. And they recently did a workshop in Kisumu.
Kenya School of Preaching.
Yeah, and then also over in Uganda. And so the same thing there. They want their preachers. There's the same reason that Brentwood Hills wanted Healing Hands to work with the Nairobi Great Commission schools, because Americans can't continue to support preachers. It just doesn't happen anymore. And so they have to have a way of being self-supporting. And, you know, KCITI has been doing that for a long period of time. They actually have a better facility because they can actually train students in auto mechanics and computer technology and different things, which the Great Commission School is landlocked on an acre of land and can't do that. But everyone recognizes the fact that we cannot continue to support preachers. We have to find a way to make them self-supporting. And I think the Bear Valley schools, to their credit, have realized that too. And so they've asked us to come in and do the same thing that we're doing with IPCM and with the Nairobi Great Commission School. So it's our hope that we will soon be able to do a better job with their schools. And if anybody's been to Tanzania before, the Andrew Connolly School has a great facility. They've, I don't know how much land, they've got like 22 acres of land. You know, they lack water. They have some water needs.
If I'm to add in 2012, or late 2011, they sent their representative to join in their workshop. And since then, they have been using those skills. The director reported to us that right now, they get 50%. They've cut down 50% of their food costs for the whole school. So we are hoping maybe in the next 12 months they should be able to cut down to zero their food costs. So that is just the aim. And for any institution to be self-supporting, I think they need to go this way. And we are ready to help them.
So now Ebenezer also is working with them, not just in teaching them how to grow food or grow gardens, but what else are you doing at the Great Commission School?
Yeah, we do. I have a background in animal science, so we train in fish farming, catfish, tilapia, whatever. We train in rabbit farming. I wrote a book on rabbit farming. So we train the students on how to grow rabbits when the culture allows, anyway.
But they don't like to eat rabbits, so.
I have managed a farm with them, a 70,000 poultry. So I have a lot of experience in poultry farming. We train the students. In fact, as a requirement, before you pass through the school, you must be able to raise a chicken from day one to market size. So we give them these skills in dairy, in cattle farming, sheep and goats, and them. So we give them a lot of options and choices. We don't expect them to go and demonstrate all the skills they've learned, but they should be able to identify the one that would be most beneficial to them, and they can choose. So that is what we do.
It says Richland, Texas. It should be Richardson, Texas. But the Greenville Avenue Church of Christ in Richardson, Texas. Talk about the work that how they contacted us.
Okay, this is another very unique group. When Carl taught at Saturn Road, one of the mission coordinators called Ray Christopher, I think was one of the participants. So he saw these skills, he knew this is a workable skill, and we have an office in Fort Worth, Texas. So we have someone running there called Doug Fair. Ray Christopher contacted Doug Fair and asked how can we help them in Africa, because they have a work going on in Kenya, and so how can we help? So we got that connection and we kept talking. When he came to Kenya, we met and we told him the first thing is level one workshop. So we set a date and a workshop took place. They brought about 15 congregations also to be trained. They have been sending monthly support to these preachers, but we trained them. And after the first training, with about 30 people, this was in 2013, to date, they have trained over 1,000 people. These who went out, all these preachers, they trained their individual congregations and they start training their people. And the people they are training others. Mm-hmm. So, and now this church has bought 5 plots for different villages to implement these skills. And the preachers, we've told them, well, for sustainability, you need to empower these preachers to be able to generate income for themselves. And so this right now, what these preachers are getting from their garden is able to pay part of the support. And so the American church is withdrawing the support totally, but empowering the preachers to generate income for themselves. I think this is right for Africa. We have our dignity. And so if you want to support us, make us to be sustainable. Give us skills. Give us money to start business or something. So this group are doing it. They have trained over 1,000 and they are not stopping. So I think we are proud of them.
Which is a neat story that, you know, we didn't seek them. They've heard about
the workshop.
And so now the support that they were giving their preachers in mm-hmm. Kenya, mm-hmm. they're able to either cut back on that support or mm-hmm. redirect it into mm-hmm. purchasing some land to help grow vegetables or... but like you said, it also has to do with dignity.
Yes. We give them commitment. As many residents as they do, we provide the drip kits. So not just the training, we provide them the tools to. So these are some of their farms, their gardens, they are doing.
This is in Kajaido. Kajaido is actually, and I know I mentioned sometimes about failures, and Kajaido is between Nairobi and Tanzania, very dry areas. A lot of places are in Kenya, and this is actually a place off the main road, back in the bush. And Chris Jingles and Ebenezer went there to do a workshop, I guess, or you had done a workshop there. And they had a real need. And you can see they're doing drip irrigation, and some of these pictures are some other parts of Kajaido. But they had a real need for water, and Chris came back all excited. Let's dig them a well, you know. We need to dig a well for this community. And so we did. I think we did get CRF to do this well, I think,
yeah,
right?
They did this well.
And but what we failed to think about was, well, what happens? There's no electricity out here. It's, you know, when we say it costs $6,000 to drill a well, that's averaging what it costs us to drill a well in India and Haiti and everywhere. I know it costs more to drill a well in Kenya than it does in India. And when you don't have electricity, you got to make sure that you have water at a certain level to get to the water. Well, they drilled a well, and what did they get? How far did they have to go down, Ebenezer?
They went to 180 meters.
180 meters, so that's what? That's probably close to 600 feet. Well, once you get below 300 feet, you can't use a hand pump. And so they needed to have another pump. They needed to have either an electric pump or a diesel power generator. And one of our problems that we have is maintenance. I mean, you know, who's going to maintain a diesel power generator? Well, what happened? The well had to go down to 180 meters, and I remember Chris hearing about this, and Chris is just going, what are we going to do? They know there's water down there at 180 meters, but we can't get to it. And what happened when
during the pump testing, for some reason we don't understand, the water level came up to the point that we can...
The static water level came up to, I think, like 9 feet. Yeah, it was pretty close. It was amazing that it came up. It was one of those situations where we just lucked out. I mean, God was, I say lucked out here, I'm talking about lucked out. God was watching over us because we were just afraid that we were going to have to spend, you know, another $30,000 to put a diesel power generator there. And so we put a hand pump in. Mm-hmm. Well, the hand pump now has broken twice.
Yeah.
And we've been in and fixed it once. And because it's being used 24 hours a day. It's being used for their cattle and the people and everything. So it's really needed. Well, it's broken again. And talk about the situation now the second time. And we just need to learn from the things that we do. We also need to understand our cultures that we're in.
We've talked about so much of our successes, but we know we also have some failures. And I think we are bold to tell us that we failed. Really, we shouldn't have put a pump here without preparing for either a solar panel, solar-powered like something, or diesel. But the need, we just overwhelmed. And here we are. We have to go ahead and drill. But now, people come all the way from up to 10 kilometers, 7 kilometers to fetch this water. So they cannot even keep up with the population. What they do is they rationalize it. If your village fish today, you will not get it tomorrow. Another village will get their own water tomorrow. And so that's how they rotate. They make people fish in daytime and they pump at night for the animals. This area is it's called Maasai tribe. They are all pastoralists. They have a lot of animals. And so now the pump, because of the pressure and the depth, the pump keep on breaking down. And while we are talking about sustainability, I told them, I'm African, so I'm proud to say I can talk to my fellow Africans. Well, this well assisted us to drill a well, but we need to maintain it. This is your own well. What we do is we allow the community to own each project that we do. And so now that we've drilled, we need to think about a way of maintenance. You don't need to sell the water, but find a way. And so the first time it broke down, they called me and we went, we repaired. Even though they repaired and told them, well, next time you will be the one to repair. And I remember just last month, okay, Greg Williams and Susie Williams were there a week before that thing broke down. It was pumping. A week later, it broke down. When Chris Dingles and I visited, it was broken down a week later. So I was telling them, so what are you going to do? I said, well, just as you said, they form a water committee. They have been maintaining it. They have been raising a little money from the water. They raised up to $300. And after the cost for repairing would have been around $400 or $500, which we would, healing us would happily have done. So where's the money? He said, well, just last week, one of the community members fell sick, and so we used the money to take him to hospital. Chris said, what?
And that's the way we think of things. You know, that's that African culture, and which is something we need to learn from some. We all need to learn from each other. I know it's quarter after. I know this time goes fast, and I know there's another class that starts at 9:30. We had much more to talk about. This was Bear Valley. We've already talked about it. Al, I was going to talk about the prisons. The great thing, Ebenezer's worked in 15 prisons. He's got 15 more that want him to come. It's just a great work that's been going on in prisons. And one of the things that really touched me was that a lot of these prisoners are in prison because they were stealing food. You know, so now they're learning how to grow food, and so hopefully that will help them when they get out of prison. I'm going to save the rest of it because I know I'm going to talk about this on tomorrow when we have our lunch. So if you guys are able to come to have lunch with us, that would be great. And I appreciate everybody being here. I know time flies in here and we don't have time for questions, but thank you, Sam, for inviting us and also giving us an opportunity to bring Ebenezer over here because we needed to do that.
We appreciate you coming to do this for us.